Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? It's not fair. Throw it away. All right?
Tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord. It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family.
Are you looking for a little escape? Want to see something?
This is sick!
You don't see every day. Are you ready for a whole new Hulk Hogan? Hulk Hogan is ripped. To the world. He's a hero. But to this man, he's history. Zeus. Stand back. Way back. Get ready for the battle no ropes can hold. No ring. No referee. No rules.
Gentlemen. It's time.
No holds barred.
This is an unprecedented display of strength and determination.
From downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 122, the 24-inch pythons, the Hulksters, 1989, epic, no holds barred, brother.
What you gonna do when one of the world's worst movies was wild on you?
I don't know, but... You saw this thing in the theater.
Yes, I did.
I came upon it later.
Okay. I did. And this is, I will say, this is No Holds Barred, a.k.a. The Day My Childhood Died. 89. Hulkamania is waning a little bit. It wasn't quite as running wild, I would say, when in the WrestleMania 3, when, you know,
nope. It was
when they packed the Pontiac Silverdome, Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant.
It's true. He had a usurper here, which was... The Ultimate Warrior, who was nipping at his heels in 1989.
Soon to then
be champ.
Beat him the year after in 1990 when I was at this Toronto Sky Dome to witness WrestleMania 6 when Ultimate Warrior beat him in what I thought at the time was the most incredible wrestling match I've ever seen in my entire life. And then I watched it recently on Netflix and thought, holy shit, this is glacial. This is a yeah. One of the most glacial things. But being there was incredible.
Yeah.
That was supposed to be a passing the torch, Hogan to Warrior, so Hogan could go off and continue his pursuit of Hollywood started, because this movie did not start anything. And Warrior was an absolute flop as a heavyweight champion, and Hogan was quickly back doing his same old tire shtick. And yeah, Hulkamania was starting to wane. However, in 1989, I was 12 years old. I was a full-fledged Hulkamaniac. The summer of 89 was an incredible summer for films. I mean, this was a packed summer. You had Tim Burton's Batman coming out. You had the second Ghostbusters movie. You had Lethal Weapon 2. You had Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
You're right, huh?
You even had Return of the Swamp Thing, directed by Jim Wynorski. This was an unbelievable summer for movies. Yeah, Do the Right Thing.
Roadhouse? No, was that a little bit earlier? 88? Okay, it was around the same time, yeah.
But the reality, I think it was 8-9, actually. I was hyped to the max to see this movie. I was still a full-fledged Hulkamaniac. I believed. I said my prayers. I took my vitamins. I was ripping my shirt. I was doing everything I can. Hulkamania was... You see, the thing is, growing up, man, there was only... I was and am a huge comic book fan, right? Superman is the idealized notion of humanity, mm-hmm. you know? Although he is an alien from the planet Krypton, Superman is who you hold up in the highest esteem. Now, as a child, there were two superhumans that walked the Earth as far as I was concerned. One being Mr. T, and the other one being Hulk Hogan.
I thought you were going to say Lou Ferrigno and the Incredible Hulk, but okay. Fine. From which he derived his name, but yeah, Mr. T as well, like, dyed-in-the-wool A-team fanatic, watching every single episode. Mm-hmm. These guys were larger than life, literally.
Mr. T, and of course, they teamed up WrestleMania 1 to take on the nefarious duo of Paul Mr. Wonderful Orndorff and the late Roddy Piper.
Jeez.
Now, in retrospect...
Not such a wonderful wrestler.
Who?
Mr. Wonderful.
Oh, okay. Piper, I thought you were going to deride Piper.
No, never. But he was wonderful, maybe with popping steroids. But other than that, yeah.
And Hogan wasn't?
No, this is true. Yeah. At least Orndorff looked good when he popped his steroids. Anyway, we digress. This is all allegations.
Well, Hogan actually won a record during the trials, the infamous steroid trials at the WWE, I believe. Or no, still the WWF at the time.
Trying to sanitize their image and start a clean slate.
Not even that. No, they were...
Or legally compelled to.
This whoever. Precipitated because they were on trial under allegations of the fact that Vince McMahon was feeding steroids to his wrestlers. And this is what started the rift, the fallout between Vince and Hulk Hogan, who at this point had been the bosomest of buddies.
Yeah, because, neighbors in Connecticut.
Because Hulk Hogan testified against Vince McMahon. Which
yes.
led to his eventual... I guess you would say resurgence in WCW as Hollywood
Hulk Hogan.
The leader of the NWO, that fucking ridiculous pitting on beer and shit. But, Hogan was juicing like there was no tomorrow. And after the steroid trials, I remember Hogan took some time off, came back for a surprise appearance at, I believe it was WrestleMania, it's going to be the worst WrestleMania of all time, WrestleMania 9, where Bret Hart had just defeated Yokozuna for the WWF Heavyweight Championship, and then Hulk Hogan makes his triumphant return looking a shell of his former self. I mean, the man went from allegedly 302 pounds to about 198 soaking wet. And this is what we saw in Santa with Muscles.
This is true with Santa with Muscles, but to the point of muscles. I recently read that he had lost several inches of height because of all the back surgeries he'd undergone. So, again, this
so
guy
claims,
was billed at 6'7",
yes.
300-plus
he
pounds.
Billed,
he's actually 6'3", 6'4".
Exactly. He was billed at 6'7", but that he would stand next to a legitimately tall wrestler.
Even The Rock. Yeah, they go eye to eye.
Yeah.
And 6'7", The Rock is not.
Now he claims that he's about 6'2", because of various surgeries, back surgeries, hip surgeries, what have you. But, I mean, this is a man who has been known to, let's just say, embellish his legend, his history. This is a man who claimed to have auditioned, and not just auditioned, but to have been asked by Lars Ulrich to join Metallica to be the replacement bassist after Cliff Burton.
Hey, that
away.
Was his first career. He was,
he was a bass player
in a metal band.
But the man, so he claims that he was good friends with Lars Ulrich, and Lars Ulrich asked him to replace Cliff Burton in Metallica. Now, this would have been around the time of WrestleMania 2, between WrestleMania 2 and 3, when Hogan was on top of the wrestling world, and he was going to throw it all away to join Metallica. Mm. Metallica would take this fucking balding goon to be their bass player? Give me a fucking break.
Yeah.
He claims that he was given the invite, and I guess he decided that his wrestling career was...
Would take precedence.
Mm. And when, I believe it was on Howard Stern, when Mars was asked about the veracity of this claim, his response was, Hulk who? So, Hulk Hogan, everything the man says, you got to take it with a grain of salt.
So he's shrunk in our estimation and physically.
Yes.
And have you seen the sex tape?
I don't want to see the sex tape. When I saw No Holds Barred in the cinema in 89, this was the day my childhood died. Okay? Because this movie was hyped to the moon on WWF TV.
Yeah, they did a... a TV tie-in to this shitty thing with one of their undercards, or maybe it was a main event, or was it a WrestleMania? They did a tie-in where they promoted the hell out of this thing.
Well, after the movie was released, they then brought the Hogan's nemesis in this movie, Zeus, actually the Tony Tiny Lister, to portray Zeus, and they actually had a couple matches in the proper WWF squared circle. But this movie was a tremendous flop. I sat there at a matinee screening with my father and my sister, and as I'm watching this movie, I'm going, man, this shit is wrong. Even as a kid, I knew that this, not only is it a bad movie, but it's wrong. This movie is wrong-headed in every direction. Now, there's a very interesting backstory about No Holds Barred, and that is, this movie was co-produced by Vince McMahon and Hulk Hogan, and at the time, they were the best of friends. And they had an affinity. Now, this is apocryphal, but I do believe it. One part is not, the other part is. They had an affinity for the Bolivian Martian powder, for cocaine. So, when they received the first draft of the script for No Holds Barred, they hated it. So what they did was they checked themselves into a Los Angeles hotel and stayed up for 3 days straight rewriting the script.
So you're telling me Terry Bollea has screenwriting credit on this?
Well, I didn't actually check the credits that he does, but no, that's the thing. That is fact, that Vince McMahon and Terry Bollea, or Hulk Hogan, stayed up for 3 days straight, nonstop, and rewrote the script. What they were doing was also ingesting enough cocaine to bring down a herd of mastodons, but that's the apocryphal part, but hey man, you watch this movie, there's fucking cocaine influence all over it. This movie is just fucking ridiculous. But, you know, I mean, I'm going back. I'm in 1989. I'm sitting in the cinema, and I'm waiting with bated breath to see my man, to see my hero, the Hulkster, up there on the big screen.
So were you making an aesthetic judgment, or were you more pissed that they depicted him as Rip, as opposed to and jettisoning his Hulkamania character and persona? Like, what would it have been? Because he was Rip.
Okay,
so
yeah.
That probably would have ticked you off right there.
Well, I mean, I knew he was playing a character, you know, but I mean, the character, yeah, Rip was Rip. What the fuck is that, man? What kind of
terrible.
3 days in a hotel room, that's the best name.
What a rip, yeah.
Why can they, I mean, get like Rip Roar, perhaps? Yeah. You know, like a little alliteration, you know? Rip. So, yeah, the movie starts off, I mean, it's like the bizarro land of WWF. I mean, it's a WWF arena. We got Mean Gene. We got Jesse
Ventura, yeah.
We're calling the action, and it's a championship bout, and it's Jake Bullitt versus Rip. Now, Jake Bullitt, did you recognize the guy?
No, but I was going to say there's tons of wrestlers in this movie, but I didn't recognize him, no.
Demolition Axe.
Oh, yeah.
That's Bill Eadie, otherwise known as Demolition Axe, with a very unfortunate hairdo.
I didn't recognize him without the leather bar attire there.
And a very unfortunately applied eye mascara.
Yeah, that would do it too.
And then they announce the world heavyweight champion, Rip. And he comes crashing down. He's Hulk Hogan, but he's not Hulk Hogan. He tears a shirt. He's accompanied to the ring by his trainer, Charlie. This elderly black dude named Charlie, which I thought was basically sort of a rip off of Rocky.
This is like Rocky with a brain lesion, essentially.
Exactly, and his brother, Randy.
Randy? Yeah, that's just awful. His minuscule little milquetoast brother who tags along with him.
And I remember, and of course you have Gene going, Randy and Rip, they're more than just brothers. There's a special bond between these two. And of course, even as a 12-year-old, you know, something's going to happen to Randy.
Yeah.
You know? So he's ripping the shirt, and he's you know, the audience is chanting, rip him, and he's got that ridiculous hand gesture, which is the rip him, which is basically the Hawaiian hang loose gesture, just a little bit different. And, yeah, I mean, he makes short work of Jake Bullitt. But his moveset, while being as limited as Hulk Hogan's, was a little different. You know, he gives him the big boot. But
yes.
It's not referred to as the big boot. It's called the big foot. And I expected Jake Bullitt to then hit the mat and be
the recipient of this ridiculous leg drop where the fleshy part of the underside of your thigh would drop on his face. How that would hurt anyone is another story, but well, I always thought Hulk Hogan had maybe the worst finishing move in all of wrestling.
Well,
for a guy that big, just to drop the fleshy part of his foot on somebody. What is that going to do? Well, second, you know, maybe second only to Ricky Steamboat, who would do a flying body press in which he would just land on you, and that would do what? Not...
Okay, we can get into the physics of wrestling. I can go on and on and on.
Mass equals force times acceleration.
Why is it that if you jump off the top rope onto your opponent, like a flying
it's that
press,
much, yeah.
You are fine, you've incapacitated your opponent, 1, 2, 3, you won. But if the opponent rolls out of the way, and instead of landing on a hard human being with bones and protuberances, you know,
oh, okay. Well,
but you land on a soft, flat mat, you are then incapacitated.
Since you mentioned that, now I have to ask, why is it that when you connect with a drop kick, your assailant is just knocked over, but when the assailant sees it coming, and you're still the same drop kick, you've hit nothing, but now you're suddenly
it's the same
incumbent.
Momentum, it's the same force, but you're rolling around the mat incapacitated. These are questions I asked myself as a 12-year-old, but it didn't matter. I believed in the leg drop. I believed in the incapacitating power of the fleshy part of that roided out thigh.
Did you believe in the double axe handle?
That's the
clenching
whole thing.
Your hands together to form, I don't know what, a bridge, and then slapping two hands into someone, which I did as a kid, because we used to emulate wrestling maneuvers at my friend Craig's place, where we'd use a stuffed dog, I believe, to do flying Randy Macho Man Savage.
Thank God it was a stuffed dog.
Yeah, off the top turnbuckle slash his pull-out sofa, where he'd jump and land on this thing, but... What does a double axe handle do? It hurts your hands really badly when you hit someone with a double axe handle.
Well, that was Rip's fishing maneuver. It was like a double axe handle. So that's what makes your work out of Jake Bullitt. Now, it's funny you say that about replicating wrestling moves on a stuffed dog, because we actually replicate these wrestling moves in the schoolyard.
That as well. Oh, my.
And I mean, we would go out there and at recess, and this was before the Royal Rumble, and we would have a Royal Rumble. All of us would just be wrestling, and I can recall being put into camel clutches, being put into figure four leg locks, and they were fucking excruciating, because we were not, you know, pulling any punches like they were actually doing in the squared circle.
What was that move where you lie on your back, you stick your foot out, and sling the guy over your head with your foot in his gut?
Was that some sort of variation of the suplex? I don't know.
I don't know, but I tried this on my friend Martin in fifth grade, and... instead of him flying over me with my leg in his gut and doing this, whatever this move was called, we can't figure it out, but he suspended in midair with my foot in his lower gut, and he was crying, and that was it for that. So let's just say that we replicated these moves rather unsuccessfully our peril.
I used to wrestle with my father, and I would give him the bionic elbow all the time. Basically, you know, the Dusty Rhodes bionic elbow right in the small of his back, and that would basically incapacitate him. And then my uncle came in from Saskatchewan to visit. We did the same thing, and I gave him the bionic elbow. Poor man. I sent him to the chiropractor about 3 years of rehab, replicating. So there's a reason why the WWE now says, don't try this at home, because back in the 80s, we were
the impressionable youth, which was us.
But that's okay, man. We survived it. We survived those moves. What I did not survive was watching this movie and... My love for Hulk Hogan intact, because yes, okay, he's Rip. He's not wearing the red and yellow.
But he's a champion of the people and the kids.
He's wearing the blue and white. And I can accept that. I can accept he's playing a character. There's going to be some differences between Hulk Hogan and Rip. Why Rip? I don't get it. It's such a generic name. It's hilarious. But as the movie begins and we're introduced to this character of Brell, played by the wonderful Kurt Fuller. I mean, this man, talk about your overacting, talk about your scenery chewing, right? This.
Your quintessential 80s Machiavellian corporate stooge.
Yeah.
He is the head of this network.
The world, was it the One World Network or something? Or the world?
I don't know, but it's like MSNBC or something. It's got absolutely no ratings, and he's looking at his competitors to try and right the ship, because
it's a world television network.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Once again, 72 hours in a hotel room, high on cocaine, and that's the best you can come up with, the world television network.
And he sees his competition is obliterating him, and he tries to, I guess, entice Rip with a check, which is a blank check, to come over to his network and do right by him.
Well, he attributes the decline of his network to the fact that he has no shitty wrestling, and he has this affinity of calling calling Rip a
jock. A jock ass?
Jock ass. Every time this jock ass decides to strip down to sweet nothings and wall around like some sweat hog, we eat it in the ratings. And so he wants to get this jock ass onto his network.
And you know that's the design, by design, Vince McMahon all over that, as a shot across the bow at WCW. Mm-hmm. This young upstart who's threatening to take his, you know, thing away from him, his little fiefdom. Mm-hmm. You know that's what was the impetus behind that.
Right. So he calls a meeting with Rip. Rip, and don't forget, they actually, in the boardroom, they said, I gotta tell you, Rip's word is his bond. So we know that Rip is a man of honor, man of integrity. But despite having integrity, he still takes the meeting.
Yeah.
And he's offered, as you mentioned earlier, a blank check to come over to this World Wrestling Network. And what does Rip do with the blank check? He doesn't rip it.
No, I should have.
He was called Jockstrap one or two too many times, and even pushed once or twice by Brell. And he takes the check, crumples it up, stuffs it down Brell's throat, and says something along the lines of, like, I wouldn't wait for that to clear, brother.
And, of course, he will not let bygones be bygones. Brell is committed to getting this guy into his stable, into his roster of talent. He knows he's a floundering network. He employs, I guess, what would you call it, a corporate spy, Samantha, to try and curry favor with him, to try and get him over to his side.
Right, but before that even occurs, I mean, this is not your ordinary, and I remember watching this kid going, I'm 12 years old, but it's just a fucking television network. They made this guy out to be the most Machiavellian evil villain since God knows what, because when Rip leaves that meeting, he's then in a limo and supposedly supposed to be taken home to his doting brother Randy, and he keeps saying, you're going the wrong way. You're going the wrong way.
Yes, I forgot about the kidnapping.
And they kidnap him and
stronger.
Take him into this empty warehouse with a whole bunch of goons. And
that's who populates empty warehouses.
Always. Always surplus of empty warehouse in 80s action films. And as Rip is realizing he's being taken somewhere where he should be taken, he's trying to physically punch his way out of the
door and through the roof. And,
and he's able to do, he's getting close, but he can't quite extricate himself from this conveyance, this vehicle. And they get there, and these goons are waiting with lead pipes and whatnot, and they're ready to destroy Rip. Now, I'm thinking, okay, so either he wants to get him on the network,
so he
can't get him, so he's going to take him out, or he wants to get him in his network, these goons are going to beat him, and that will convince him to go on the network.
Is implausible.
Would you want to incapacitate Rip? Anyway, when Rip realizes he's in mortal peril, defying all laws of physics, he jumps through the roof of this limousine and makes short work of these goons. Which leads to one of the most
iconic scenes in the whole film. I had to look this up because we're, of course, referring to the Dookie scene.
The Dookie scene.
And Dookie is an album by a shitty punk Pretenders Green Day.
Right.
And this is Dog Poop.
Right. And you're about to say, this is the scene when I broke inside. Because this is when I said, this is wrong. Because, yes, let's talk about the Dookie scene.
Well, it's the limo driver, I guess, and he...
After he makes short work of the goons, he then goes and takes the limo driver out of the vehicle forcibly, and...
The man is so petrified about what's going to happen that he...
Well, I mean, the camera pans down already to show that he soiled his pants.
Yes.
And Hulk Hogan grabs him by the scruff of the neck and goes, what's that smell? And the limo driver, very, very pathetic, goes,
Dookie!
And then Hogan just looks at him and goes, Dookie!
But I could have sworn that was dog poop. So anyway, I'm still confused. But anyway,
he
shit his pants.
Right.
And I feel like the bowels were emptied on me watching this thing, so I can only imagine what you felt, but my God. Stupidity run rampant, and again, this corporate espionage sends this beautiful woman to track him down. If beating him or threatening him or blackmailing him won't work, then we're going to try another tack. Mm-hmm. And we got to say, when they meet up, how inane and ridiculous the rapport between these two is. Just inane beyond belief. They go out to dinner, one of his favorite establishments. She's, you know, she's an executive. She's in communications. She works for a PR agency. They go to this French bistro. And the waiter, is this a French theme this week on the podcast? We got martyrs and no holds barred. Who knew? The waiter is patronizing him about champignon, mushrooms. I know that much French to know what a champignon is.
Monsieur wants a American hamburger.
Like he was 7 years old.
You gotta remember, Hulk Hogan is resplendent in his white, you know, tuxedo at this point.
And then all of a sudden, he just, the chefs all emerge from the you know, the cordon bleu back room there in the kitchen, and they say, oh, we want to meet you, sir. And Rip breaks out some not all altogether terrible French.
French, yeah.
J'ai faim. I'm hungry. Mm-hmm. And see, they know each other, and this guy proves himself to be a little more than the bestial lunkhead that Sam takes him out for to be. And this is how they hit it off.
Right. And so then
the language
have,
of love.
So then we have the other thing that really struck me as wrong as a child, and that is the burgeoning romance between Samantha and Rip. I mean, you gotta remember at the time, the WWF, I mean, their target audience was, I would say, people from the age of like 6 to like 16 at the utmost, you know? And there's a lot of sexual innuendo. And it's wrong, just wrong, because they check into a motel, they're on some sort of promotion tour of some sort.
Yeah, and they can't spring for two rooms.
Well, so there was some mistake that was made. So they're
yeah, they're supposed to bunk together, yeah.
And ever the gentleman, Hulk Hogan actually strings up his workout tape or whatever you put around his wristband and a blanket to separate the room, separate their twin bed. And she walks out from the shower wearing bra panties, and only to have this, like, this leering, lascivious look at Hulk Hogan's butt cheeks. And that just was wrong to me. I was like, what? No, come on. What are you doing?
These pulsating gluteus muscles, and he's doing push-ups in front of her. And like, yeah. Well, not in front of her, but yeah.
But then, she spies on later on, she wakes up in the middle of the night, and she hears this noise that can only be construed as self-pleasuring. Yeah. And that's the implication that Hogan is pleasuring himself, but really what he's doing is
it's just grunts. Yeah.
Wearing a Speedo. And I'm just like, oh my God, again, like I'm thinking of myself at the age of 12, and even like the other day when I rewatched this, it's going, this is fucking wrong. Wrong, wrong, wrong. But we got to get back to Brell. Because Brell says, okay, well, if I'm not going to get Rip on my network, I'm going to do something else.
A talent search.
And they end up going to this bar, which makes the Double Deuce and Roadhouse look like the most, you know...
Yeah, gentrified English, full English pub. Yeah, yeah. And
where they have these tough guy competitions, I guess. You know, these no holds barred, right, competitions. And it's just a bunch of out of shape idiots being the crap out of each other. One being played by wrestling legend Stan Hansen.
Oh, yes, of our mutual favorite, Bane. The bane of moviegoers' existence. This awful, awful Batman and Robin. Svensson.
Oh, that was Jeep Svensson. Yeah, I know it was
Jeep Svensson.
Yeah, he played Bane.
So, yeah, a number of wrestlers are interchangeable throwaway 6'4", 300-pound lunkheads who beat each other down in this shitty bar where they have a makeshift ring and it's protected by tires. It's got a bunch of redneck stereotypes. It's got washrooms you probably procure hepatitis from. You would not want to set foot in them. But this is the place. This is where Brell and his network does their talent search to try and find their own version of Rip to compete against them. And this is a hotbed of wrestling talent. Mm. And
it appears that the man that they're going to find is Bubba. And this is the character played by Stan Hansen. And all of a sudden, who should walk into the ring? Not the ring per se, but the bar. But this hulking, no pun intended,
6'5", 350-pound behemoth.
With a unibrow.
Crossed eyes.
You know, ball pate with like a Z or a Z for our American listeners. Yeah. Shaved into his head. And this is Zeus. Played by...
the ironically named Tiny Lister.
Tiny Lister, who was actually... he's a respectable actor. I mean, this man was in The Fifth Element... He was probably most famous for playing Debo in the Friday series with Ice Cube. Mm. But yeah, he goes in there and this is being televised, and Rip is watching this with Charlie and Randy. And Charlie goes, I thought he was incarcerated. Because it turns out that Charlie at one point was his trainer, and then he went a little too far, and he killed a guy in the ring. And
that old tale, him.
Yeah, indeed. So Zeus is, they set him up to be this unstoppable monster. And, again, this is an actor they hired with no wrestling skills whatsoever, but he's your chief nemesis. He is basically your Clever Lang in this movie to Rip's Rocky Balboa. Which is a little bit apropos, because Hulk Hogan played Thunderlips in Rocky III to Sylvester Stallone's Rocky. So, Zeus becomes this rising star in this,
Tough Man circuit. Yeah, yeah, it's exactly. Sort of a nascent UFC at the time, mm-hmm. where it was just human cockfighting. He goes in, and the cliche of cliches, one guy, I think he beats the tar out of him by throwing him the length of the bar, which is always the cliche in the Westerns, where everyone's sitting there and drinking, and then the body comes flying around, and then they lift the drink so the body can pass under them.
It's so almost like they slap the bar through the or something, so the guy can just,
Like it's an Olympic luge. Like, yeah, how does the guy slide down a sleazy bar? Like,
I'm thinking the
never wiped down. Yeah,
when I was a kid, that's the yellow tarp that you would spray with water and you just slide the way down it. Because again, that's physically impossible.
Oh yeah,
And ultimately, what Brell wants to do is he wants to challenge Rip to a fight. His man Zeus versus Rip, and of course, Rip having none of it. I mean. He tries to embarrass him while Rip is doing some charity work and with a bunch of kids, teaching them wrestling. Oh, you're both winners now, Mm-hmm. And he's there with his idiotic brother Randy, and the helicopter flies in, and...
Complete with rainbow decal, as if this movie couldn't get any gayer with the rippling muscles. Anyway, he's got the rainbow flag motif on this helicopter, descends, and Zeus, who has been... We just find out who he is because he didn't announce himself until they thrust a mic in front of his face in this shitty bar. That and Zeus is actually his name.
And I love that too. And they said, "What's your name?" And he goes,
"Zeus." So the helicopter descends. He comes out, throws down the gauntlet to Rip, mm-hmm. who, in front of all his screaming kid fans,
these would be the Hulkamaniacs. But I guess one of these the
Rip roars.
Rip, yeah, exactly.
And he stands down. Yeah. That must have just been humiliating.
It was humiliating to me watching it. So, to watch the great Hulk Hogan and Rip just stand down, not even, go like...
You name the time and the place, I'll be there, which is what he should have done.
I mean, what Zeus should have done is he should have ripped Rip's crucifix from his neck, like Andre the Giant did, in order to get, that WrestleMania 3 match signed. But
yes,
he didn't do that. So, there's got to be a way to get to Rip. Now, Randy, being the idiot that he is, decides to go to one of these tapings, and afterwards, he's discovered as being the brother of Rip. And he gets a shit kicked out of him. Zeus destroys him.
Yeah, he chokes him out, puts him in the hospital.
Randy ends up in the hospital with a ridiculous neck brace. And there's Rip. Oh my God, Randy. What? Randy. Crying over his stupid infirm brother. And then he's like, okay, well, now it's personal.
It's not personal before getting called out in front of all your fans by helicopter. And then being embarrassed and walking out of there with your tail between your legs. And now it's personal? All right.
Well, they have a special relationship. And that was...
Now you crossed the line.
As far as I'm concerned, something about Randy seemed a little bit special. But I'm not going to... So... It comes down to a mano a mano
between the unstoppable force and the immovable object.
Whatever, and this looks so fucking cheap because the movie begins after a house show or some sort. They then film this match between Rip and Jake Bullitt, but the climactic battle takes place in the World Network Studios, and it's just this ridiculous TV studio with like Christmas tinfoil surrounding it.
Yeah, they didn't exactly maximize the drawing power of Rip
versus Zeus
by putting it in, say, the Pontiac Silverdome in front of 50,000 people. Yeah. They put it in this podunk studio. Yeah. I guess they just figure the ratings will be so high, it's not even They don't need the gate? I don't know. Who am I to question?
You know, I mean, you mentioned the UFC, and I mean, this movie was a little bit prescient because they do fight in an octagon,
mm-hmm.
and this is a no-holds-barred match. And, of course, you've got the infirm Randy at ringside wearing a ridiculous neck brace. And
cheering on his older brother.
Yeah. And don't forget, they also kidnapped Samantha, who at this point has now become Rip's love interest.
Yeah,
and
she goes from PR hag trying to, you know, get him to get out of a contract to finally realizing, after they have this scintillating banter between them, I'm too busy to date. Must get lonely. And then the two eventually have the sexual tension between them. She realizes he's a good guy, goes over to his side, realizes her efforts are for naught. So, yeah.
Knowing that this Brel is a fucking psycho, Rip gets a call from Brel saying, make it look good for 10 minutes and then take a dive or else something's going to happen to Samantha. So there's that little piece of tension to the final bout. And so they fight. And I mean, I got to say, and again, this broke my heart as a kid because Hogan gets a living shit kicked out of him. Zeus is basically getting the better of him for the majority of the fight until Rip, of course, rips up and then, you know, manages to sort of better...
Zeus, when a foot is going to come down on him for maybe the coup de grace, a foot to the face, mm-hmm. although in wrestling that doesn't seem to be anything, you know, more harmful than maybe a slap. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he catches the guy's wrestling boot, holds it up, manages to evade the boot, gets up, gives him, again, the patented double axe handle. Mm-hmm. What this would do to a 350-pound man, I don't know. Even does, although this is pretty sad, given that I've seen Hulk Hogan pick up, if you want to use the term, Andre the Giant and body slam him. Here, they clearly used movie trickery and sophistry to body slam Zeus, because this was a sad body slam here. Lots of cutaways, and he does get the better of him, though.
But you got to remember, though, that that's not the end of the fight, because this is a no-holds-barred match, right? Mm. And at one point, Zeus actually tears off the ring post and tries to use that as a weapon.
Always a favorite of WWE. There's always something in that ring post.
But nobody ever tore the fucking thing off. And Zeus tries to escape by running up to the control booth where Brel is, you know, going fucking apeshit. And of course, he knocks over Randy in his wheelchair and gives him a kick or two for good measure. And Brel's going apeshit. He's pulling out wires hither and thither, and there's all these electrical sparks flying. And ultimately, yes, Rip, we're spoiling the shit out of this movie. It doesn't matter. Rip wins. He gives him another axe hammer. The guy falls from the, you know, I don't know, it looked like about what, maybe like 10 feet, 15 feet, right through the ring. And then Rip turns his attention to Brel. And he's got those eyes, those crazy eyes of Hulk, and goes, now I'm coming for you.
Yeah.
And Brel backs up into these electrical wires and is electrocuted to death. And again, I'm 12 years old, dude. This is a movie ostensibly for kids. And it ends with a man being... It's not like, okay, he survived the execution, because we see, like, blood, you know, rivulets of blood coming out of his mouth. So, I mean...
Well, not to mention a motorcycle goon being sent to physically assault Samantha.
That too.
Which is a near rape. And yeah. So it prompts the question, to whom would this thing be marketed? This is really inappropriate for his fan base at the time.
Exactly, exactly. So we have the death of Brel, and when Brel passes on, the 200 people in the audience go apeshit, cheering. And I mean, it's wrong in every single way. Between the sexual innuendo, between, yes, you know, the repeated assaults on Samantha, between the death of Brel, I mean, this was a movie... It was marketed to kids, but it was just wrong. And this was a movie that should have been made by Canon.
Mm-hmm.
This was the most Canon movie ever not made by Canon.
True enough.
It was absolutely 100% ludicrous. And not to mention the fact that they then tried to parlay this piece of shit into a wrestling angle by bringing Zeus into the world of the WWF and having him challenge Hulk Hogan, teaming up with Randy Savage. It was Hogan and Beefcake versus Savage and Zeus on a couple pay-per-views. But, the movie, it was a gigantic flop. It flopped. To the point that when, during the Monday Night Wars, when they were just lobbying insults back and forth, and Hogan was wrestling for the competitor, WCW, when they mentioned No Holds Barred. And Jim Ross quit, No Holds Barred, shouldn't that be called No Profits Allowed?
Well.
That sort of thing. So, I mean, this was just, it was a complete debacle from start to finish. And, I mean, talk about getting a movie career off to a very...
Inauspicious start, beginning, yeah.
Because I think he followed this one up with, like, Mr. Nanny and Santa with Muscles, which we podcasted way back when, yeah. And Three Ninjas and all this other crap. And, yeah, I mean, this movie is...
It really goes to show there are very, very few men of this size who are able to wrestle in the ring, and fewer still who are able to translate it into a movie career.
Mm-hmm.
For sure, on the wrestling front, The Rock and Undertaker, giant men who were excellent workers, athletic, who sold any match. And in the case of The Rock, he's in this movie with Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
He's going to blow up. He is charisma personified.
Yep.
But most big guys, my God, they got to be carried around the ring. And a lot of the fights in here were decidedly underwhelming, whether it be Stan... I always want to call him Stan the Man Hansen, but his moniker was not that.
It was a lariat.
Yeah, it should have been the man. And Svensson, obviously, from the awful Batman movie. But
the
label
Svensson, by the way, he's passed on.
Well, as most wrestlers have. We were talking about the promo for this film, which was, I guess, Dino Bravo against the Ultimate Warrior. And when you want to talk about the sordid history of wrestling, Dino Bravo was a Canadian wrestler who was named Alphonse Bracciano or something. He met his maker prematurely, as is the case with many, many wrestlers, by being shot like 10 times by, I think, a mob hit in Montreal. So most of them, like, we're lucky that Hulk is still with us, because all of his colleagues from that cohort, they're dead.
Yeah, and even it's funny because I own this movie on the Blu-ray. Two special features. There are two of the matches that actually took place with Hogan and Zeus. And I'm watching one of the... It was a SummerSlam main event with Hogan teaming up with Beefcake with Miss Elizabeth in their corner, because at that point she was on the outs with Randy Savage, versus Savage, Zeus, and his manager at the time, Sensational Sherry, otherwise known as Scary Sherry. And I'm going, holy shit, three of these participants are dead. Being Elizabeth, Sherry, and Savage. So, yeah, I mean...
And the aforementioned Ultimate Warrior, obviously, is dead. And very few of them make it to their 60s. Or 50s, even. It's really rare that they do.
But again, I mean, this goes right back to what was going on in the WWF in the 80s. I mean, drugs were rampant. Steroids were rampant. It was a very, very different WWF than it is now. It's funny, because now they have what they call the wellness policy. Their golden boy, I don't watch their wrestling at all, but I do keep up with on the internet with what's going on. The golden boy that they're trying to now push is like the new Cena, John Cena, another guy, I guess, Roman Reigns, which is suspended for violating the wellness policy. And it's very nebulous as to what he did. He could have taken some steroids, he could have smoked some weed, right? But the reality is they're doing this so that these wrestlers can now live a healthy old age.
That's hilarious that they call it a wellness policy. These guys work 200 dates of the year. Mm-hmm. So what kind of wellness is this? So even if they're completely clean of Bolivian marching powder, your coke and your meth and your steroids and performing enhancing whatnots, these guys are worked to the bone.
Right.
So this is ridiculous. So way worse than 80s. Football players or any other UFC fighters or anything.
In the 80s, when the wrestling was really at its peak, they were working all those days of the year, but they were working not just once a day, but they would do two or three days. Like, they would do a matinee house show and an evening house show. And when they were on these tours, on these circuits, they would just be taking every drug they can get their hands on.
Painkillers and everything else.
And, I mean, everybody was juiced. Piper was juiced. Everybody, you know? So, the wrestlers are living longer now, and those that run afoul of this wellness program get suspended. They're reaching out to former wrestlers and paying for their stints in rehab. Sonny. You remember Sonny, WWF Diva Sonny?
Yes.
She just came out of rehab, 90 days sober, finally. You know, porn, she's also done some porn, whatever. We recently lost China. You know.
Yes.
But...
Jeez, these names were dredging out of the past. Like, what's next? The Great Haku? But like, what is going on here?
But this is the paradox. The wrestlers are cleaner. They're healthier.
And the product is suffering.
Suffering.
And it's being eclipsed by the real octagon, which is UFC fighting. And they have not found their niche, which is young people too young to have discovered real fighting, which is UFC or boxing or whatever, or K1 kickboxing. So they have a little audience that it's been abandoned, and they're trying to catch them, because for a time during the Attitude Era, where they had excessive vulgar gestures and you had these people, like, you know, doing these groin maneuvers and stuff, it's like, who was their audience there?
Oh, that was the second golden era. The first golden era was Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling era, and then you had the Attitude Era with The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin and vulgarity and sexuality, and that was great too. And now they're in their PG-13. No, it's not even PG-13. They're in the PG era with, you know, your Cena's and your Roman Reigns, and
they're frantically trying to find their identity, because they're being attacked on all sides. Where are they going to go? Not to mention the competitors, all the other wrestling federations. Mm-hmm. So, what are they going to do? Well, but they do not occupy the perch of prominence that they once did. It's akin to boxing. Whereas, like, who even knows who the heavyweight champion of the world is? Mm-hmm. This is unprecedented. It used to be Lennox Lewis, Mike Tyson, you know, all these guys, and Evander Holyfield, and, like, who?
Well, it's interesting because you say competitors, but, I mean, in one sense, they're the only game in town. I mean, there's no more WCW, there's no more ECW, there's no more AWA, you know, all these old, you know, when I used to read the old Pro Wrestling Illustrated, and you would see, like, AWA champion Rick Martel, NWA champion Ric Flair, WWF champion Hulk Hogan. They're all gone. All you have is a WWF, and you have these smaller competitors, like, you know, Ring of Honor, TNA, etc. So when it comes to wrestling, they're pretty much the only major game in town. But then the other thing is the UFC, which has seemed to have captured a lot more people's attention nowadays.
But even who is the champ in WWE? Like, other than Cena and Roman Reigns, like, I don't really know. There are no real transcendent figures.
I believe that there was a pay-per-view held just this past Sunday, and Roman Reigns lost his title to
exactly
Seth Rollins.
Seth Rogen?
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, these guys do not transcend popular culture in the way that the Rock or Stone Cold did. These guys, or Jesse Ventura, hell, like, you want to go back that far? Anybody?
Governor of Minnesota.
Yeah, and there's no one. They are in their maybe death throes. So where are they going to go with this thing? I don't know what the ratings are like. I can imagine they're not very good because nobody's talking about it.
Yep.
And it's not only because we've left that. Is we've always kept one foot in the wrestling, in the squared circle, shall we say, because we like to keep tabs. And there was a time when The Undertaker was still hanging on, and there was still, The Rock would still make his appearances, where I was still checking it out and seeing what new talent would be in there.
And then
Randy Orton and all these guys, it's like, oh, God, you know?
And then they even had a pretty interesting superstar on the rise, Daniel Bryan.
Exactly. And who had to retire because of back injuries and all sorts of the sort.
And whatnot, But, I mean,
so much for wellness, but we digress.
Going back to what I said about the paradox, yes, wrestlers are healthier, they're living longer, but they're far less interesting. They're not these larger-than-life characters anymore. You know, you don't have this clear delineation between the face and the heel, where you really love the face and you hated the heel. And I mean, man, like, I appreciate the shit out of Roddy Piper now. Bobby the Brain Heenan, you know, I look back on it, what they did, and it was incredible. But as a kid, I wanted them dead. That's how much I hated them, you know?
And with the rampant xenophobia that they had at the time, you could still love the guys who were ostensibly the bad guys, the Iranian bad guy, the Iron Sheik. You loved him because his moves were awesome. His finishing move was wicked. The Russian guys, they sing. We probably know the Russian national anthem now because of Nikolai Volkov. So even the bad guys were great, the good guys were great, heels became faces, vice versa, they did it all really well. Now, no one has an angle, no one has a gimmick that's really good, they just have little catchphrases. Mm-hmm. But it's not, like, they should go back to that era and have gimmicks based on stuff that's happening in popular culture. They're not really tied into the zeitgeist anymore. When you have guys like Daniel Bryan, that's his name? It sounds like just any schmo on the street. He's not.
Yeah, Daniel Bryan. John Kane. Cena. Seth Rollins.
You know. Haku. You know, Big John Studd. Daniel Bryan. Yeah. It's sad.
I hear what you're saying. Even Rip now sounds a little more compelling.
It's true.
So, But yeah, so it's because yes, it's true because you and I both grew up watching the WWF in its heyday. It's always a WWF to me. I can't call it WWE, you know.
I forgot to mention also the physicality of the performers too, because there was variance and variety in body type, mm-hmm. whereas now everyone is got abs you could grate cheese on, like there's ridiculous six packs, whereas in the glory era you had 6'5", 400-pound guys who would be perfect candidates for bariatric surgery. Big fucking slobs who are ready to drop dead at a heartbeat, mm-hmm. maybe literally. Like, and now you have everyone is a muscle head, and they're all giant, but you need to have different physical types.
And let's also talk about the dearth of jobbers.
This is true.
The jobbers were the best, not one of the best, but I mean they were an integral element in terms of, because we would watch, you know, the Saturday afternoon wrestling shows, and all you would see was, you know, the jobbers getting their ass handed to them. Your Steve Lombardis, your Barry O's, your Barry Horowitz's, your Mr. X's, your...
Yeah, and to be fair, at the time, we thought that was a bit of a jip, because these guys had no hope in hell of ever winning. Although they did win the odd time. Like, Mr. X would win. Yeah.
Like, I remember watching Hogan actually make a very rare appearance on a Saturday afternoon program fighting some sort of jobber or some overweight ginger named Randy West or something. And Randy West actually got a few shots in. Like, everybody can see, like, oh my god, an upset in the making. But
true, well, the pendulum swung too far. You always need a piece of shit who you can destroy. And that even goes for UFC. You can't have the best guys fight each other.
Yeah.
You need a young, up-and-coming guy who sucks that the other guys can beat on because it makes him look better. So you need these guys to put over, as wrestling parlance is, make the good guys look super good.
And the bad guys look super bad.
Yeah.
These were the guys that would eat the snake, you know, and take the snake would then, you know, take the snake and break over their body or something.
Yeah.
And I mean, they were, you know, the wrestling parlance is they were enhancement talent. So they were there to make the stars look like
superstars.
And then, so then when you have your big pay-per-views, then you're chomping at the bit to see the star versus the star. Now, there's like 3 hours of Raw of your week, 2 hours of SmackDown. I don't watch it, but it's just, they just keep repeating the same permutation of matches over and over and over again. So, wrestling has definitely fallen from its perch, and I mean, this started off as a podcast about the movie No Holds Barred, and we now sort of digress, and we're talking about wrestling today versus yesteryear, but the movie itself, I mean, it came out of the glory years of wrestling.
But did a disservice to wrestling fans with shitty wrestling in the wrestling movie. This was crap wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And they had workers who they could have put in against them that would have made for sensational matches. Because any of the times these things are strung together with some sort of semblance of a plot, let's say some octagon or cage fighting movie, there's always top-notch, upper-tier fighting you can watch in between. In this case, the silliness of the romance between Sam and Rip. But this is very underwhelming, schlocky fighting. And they're really trying to put over Zeus, who was a terrible worker, shall we say, in the ring. He was shitty. He was an actor, yeah. And right now I think he's a born-again Christian or something. But he's not a good wrestler. He's just a physically imposing guy. And his wrestling moves in this film reflect that. Shoddy wrestling. Bad fight scenes. Terrible set pieces. Weird 80s Machiavellian corporate goon who sends his hitmen to go after women to assault them, assault them. What is going on
here? Sexual innuendo, Hulk Hogan's butt cheeks in a lewd and lascivious scene, and a very odd tone.
That
did not match the tone.
Very canonesque. Very much so. Bang on with that.
So, I mean, I don't know. It did come out, but it's funny because as we were talking about how shitty wrestling is nowadays, and I'm thinking about No Holds Barred. I'm like, it makes it almost better. Because yes, the wrestling was not great. They use enhancement talent, jobbers, you know, because I'm sure Vince didn't want his
A-listers to be injured or whatever.
I mean, not injured, but just to look bad on the silver screen.
Oh, yeah, that too,
I mean, when they had Smash, he was, Axe, Demolition Axe, he was unrecognizable because he wasn't wearing his grease paint as Jake Bullitt. But all the same, I would take watching No Holds Barred again and again and again over watching a 3-hour WWE Raw show right now. It was more entertaining.
For sure.
So, crappy movie, But at the same time, more entertaining than the product that WWE is putting out right now.
And, oh, I agree wholeheartedly. And for our favorite segment that we always do, what did we learn? I'm saying that now because I'm thinking exactly what I learned here is when you're a formidable champ designate who's emerged from prison, apparently you do your tune-up fights in an iron foundry. Like, what kind of venue was this? Like, there was, like, bars and, you know, it was
very
like
Cobra-esque.
Yeah, it was absolutely, utterly inane. And also, we touched on it before, how if this guy is your big box office gate draw, you would hold your pay-per-view event in a studio instead of having 60,000, 80,000 people, as you've seen with UFC, descending on it to really milk the thing for all it's worth by putting bums in the seat, $100 a pop, you make tons of money. But no, this is a network that's really doomed to fail. They don't know what the hell they're doing. What did you learn?
Well, again, I mean, going back to the 80s and going back to a lot of these action flicks, particularly the sports theme ones, I mean, you always have to have your song, you know, whether it be Eye of the Tiger in Rocky III or You're the Best Around in The Karate Kid. And this one was no different. I mean, you had a song written by Jim Johnston, who to this day is still the man writing the themes for the WWE wrestlers. And this is the song that played over the closing credits, and it was called No Holds Barred.
Of course.
And the lyrics are just fucking inane. When your back's against the wall, and there's no holds barred.
Oh, I thought you were going to do da 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 da. It's the same cadence as Hulk's.
Well, he also a real American.
Oh, okay. There you go. Is he returning to the well on that one, though?
Yeah.
But the best WWE entrance music was invariably done by not him. And I want to say Motorhead for the game.
Lemmy, yep.
For another game. Terrible giant wrestler there, but who straddles the old era with the new almost perfectly. Started out with a great gimmick of the Connecticut snob, turned into this by marrying the boss's daughter, Triple H, who lasted 20 years of just inept, terrible wrestling. But anyway, we could go on and on.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's so funny because we were recently guests on the podcast, and they asked us about the genesis of the Really Awful Movies podcast, and I said that at times, you know, you and I being longtime friends, we would go to bars and we would talk about movies, have these fun conversations. I would say, well, hey man, if we could record this would be a fun podcast. Now, I recall even 20 years ago, we'd be sitting at a bar and everybody would be talking about everything else, and you and I would be reminiscing on WWF jobbers.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, do you remember those
days? Yeah, it's come full circle. It's nice to give Mr. X and Iron Mike Sharp and the Italian Stallions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I was like, Chris,
that's a scary thought.
Chris, do you remember Barry O? You'd be like, oh my God, Barry O! Yes, that guy. You know?
And Barry Horowitz. Yeah. But I'm also thinking like Zeus. He's a formidable 6'5", 350-pound, weightlifting, giant goon. Like, you could screen a movie on this fucker's back. He's a giant. A welterweight in the UFC could beat the shit out of him, take him down, choke him out in 2 seconds. But it's funny, this thing, like, they put him against 6'3", 400-pound guys, and he gets the better of them. But still, the ability of some of these guys to take a punch is so ridiculous. And it's the same in Rocky, as we drew parallels with this in Rocky. My God. A guy this size, one punch, he should have one punch knockout power, not double axe handle knockout power, and not this ridiculous bear hug, which is another pet peeve of mine, another shitty wrestling move that could not stop anybody.
Yeah.
Unless you're a child and you're held in the arms of like Lou Ferrigno, you have you will not submit to that in a way you would to a Kimura or a chokehold in UFC. It's inane.
Well,
and of course, Hogan is like, oh, his arm is about to drop, and then it comes out, and his fist clenches, and he bears down and gets the better of the bear hug with the elbow to the gut, the same move that always stops the bear hug. Why he doesn't do that right off the bat, why he has to fall into a half slumber before he does the elbow is anybody's guess, but anyway.
But we were trained like Pavlovian dogs, you know?
We knew the bear hug was sinister.
We knew that third, dropping of the fist would result in a clench, and of course the hulking up, and in this movie it was the ripping up, I would say.
Oh, God, yeah.
But we loved it, man. We loved it.
Yeah.
Maybe were we more innocent, were the times more innocent? I don't know, but it was fun.
For sure.
So now I got to ask you, star rating for No Holds Barred.
Oh my God. Well, again, like as a movie, as a movie with cliches galore, like headline cliche, the newspaper to forward the plot. Which, if I never see that ever again, just please, I never want to see this. The guy throwing the length of the bar cliche, the cliche of the people who meet under bad circumstances, become lovers, all of these things, just awful. So as a movie, and Burrell is just, that's a terrible performance, over the top. Speaking of another bad movie, over the top, awful. This is a one-star movie.
Well,
but
the actor
again,
himself, Kurt Fuller, said if he can get this erased from his IMDb page, he would do so.
That's like, very, very telling. Yeah. But as a fun, dunderheaded, juiced-up, wrestling, squared circle movie, I'm going to give it a solid 3. It's hugely entertaining, for sure.
Well, it's no Darren Aronofsky's a wrestler.
No.
But I'm going to give it, I would have given it 2.5. I'm going to up it to a 3 to match you.
Yeah.
Just for the Dookie scene alone.
Yes, for sure.
So there you go. It's 3 stars.
Well, brother, be sure and check out www.reallyawfulmovies.com for fun reviews 3 times a week.
I thought you were going to say WWF.com.
And follow us on Twitter. Send us any wrestling-related movie suggestions, because Hunt to Kill, featuring the Texas Rattlesnake, Stone Cold Austin. We love our wrestling movies, and we're going to delve into some John Cena territory, some WWE shitty productions.
Never mind. On this Blu-ray, there was before the movie started, there was about 9 trailers, 2 of which were movies starring Triple H, which I really want to see.
Yeah, me too.
And another one was a movie called Knucklehead starring The Big Show, which I'm actually
terrible worker.
Yeah.
Just a disgrace when you compare him to Andre the Giant, but we digress again. Mm-hmm. Follow us on Twitter, awful_movies, and of course our podcast. Send us your suggestions, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.